Opening Soon is sponsored by Pop Menu, which helps turn first-time guests into regulars for your restaurant. For a limited time, get $100 off your first month at popmenu.com/HRN.
"14 months in and it's finally here. Vaccines, reopenings, and targeted restaurant relief. After a year of lobbying by the Independent Restaurant Coalition, the IRC, the Restaurant Revitalization Fund started taking applications this week."
Woohoo!
Yay!
Yay! It's so exciting. So here to talk to us today about the grant fund and reopening in general is Chef Amanda Cohen. She is the owner of the acclaimed and beloved OG vegetarian temple, Dirt Candy. Our neighbor here at Tilla NYC, she's just a block away, so we're actually recording in person for the first time in 14 months, all fully vaccinated. So much to celebrate. Amanda is an active member of the IRC, and she is an outspoken advocate of reopening the industry differently. So we are
welcome.
So excited to have you here and to be chatting. So first and foremost, thank you for spending the last year advocating and actually getting something done. How does it feel?
It feels pretty good. I think Monday when the portal opened at the SBA and we all were sort of doing our applications and we all started crying again. Everybody who had sort of been a real big part of the IRC, because this is what we had been working for. I mean, we all learned how to lobby. We've all met our representatives. We've all done like really weird things out of our comfort zone. And all of a sudden it really happened. Here we were, and we were certainly a part of getting the restaurant community more funding. It's not enough yet. 186,000 businesses registered on Monday.
Holy shit. Crazy. I read it was like 1 in 3 restaurants registered.
Yeah, basically. And then it was like something like 100,000 within the first hour.
Wow.
No website crashes.
There were so many.
Yeah. There were.
Yeah, I mean, they did as good as they could. You know, they put it together, but yeah, I mean, people were sort of stuck in limbo for a couple hours.
It's like refresh.
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
PPP flashbacks.
90, I think what it was, it's something like 91,000 of those are sort of priority mm-hmm. applicants. Mm-hmm. So they're women or veterans or minorities. They'll be the ones who get their applications looked at first. But that's pretty amazing, because what happened with the PPP, and one of the reasons that we started fighting so hard for the Restaurant Relief Fund, was that smaller businesses got left out. Mm-hmm. They don't have that relationship with their banks. It all happened so fast that I don't think it was explained properly to the smaller businesses either. And a lot of the sort of immigrant communities had just left money on the table that they could have had. I think maybe in June, I was invited to testify in front of the Small Business Committee. And our representative in this area, Congresswoman Nadia Velasquez, she had asked me, because I was one of the few restaurants in this area, which mm-hmm. includes Chinatown, mm-hmm. and that had actually applied. And
wow.
Gotten it. Yeah.
And if you don't know, I mean, we're in the Lower East Side in borderline Chinatown, and there are probably 4 restaurants per block.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's crazy.
So,
yeah.
I mean, that was shocking
That's
to me.
Shocking.
It's not because I'm such a good speaker or that they were like excited to have me. It's because they could find me.
Right.
The discussion was the need for money. And then we started realizing, as part of the Independent Restaurant Coalition, that if we were going to be successful and really represent independent restaurants, we needed to represent this group as well. And so that's what we've been working so hard on. So it's so heartening to know that 96,000 of them applied.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Amazing.
How did getting the word to these restaurants differ from the PPP?
We had more time. Right. So that was one thing, right? I mean, we've been working on this for basically a year. And you know, that first round of PPP happened almost within a week.
It dried up.
Which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like mm-hmm. good for Congress getting something passed mm-hmm. that fast. Mm-hmm.
Businesses had the leg up and they had the connection to know to log in immediately. Or
yeah.
Whatever.
And they have the relationship with their banker and they could get their papers really easy, or the papers they had were really what the people who were overseeing the PPP wanted to see. Whereas in a small business, you might not have those exact specific papers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have translated everything into something like 14 different languages on our site.
Wow.
Everybody who is in their own communities have reached out. I know that I had A couple of members of the New York City Council, they walked around Chinatown and handed out flyers.
That's amazing.
Just like over
really
and over
grassroots, yeah. Like outreach.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. So how long is the portal taking applications for? Is there any idea? It was 26.8 billion in funding?
28 point, I think 3 billion. It was 25.
Okay.
In the first ask, it was 120 billion. And then that became 25 billion. And then at the end, when they were doing their reconciliation, there was actually sort of 3 billion extra left over.
I mean, and that's a nice surprise bonus.
So Senator Schumer sort of pushed it our way.
Aww.
So that's why we actually went up to 28 plus billion.
Thanks, Senator Schumer.
I know.
Yeah. Thanks, Chuck.
Obviously we're going to need more money. So that's our next project is getting the program refunded, but really getting the program set up was like incredibly hard. And so that next step hopefully will be a little easier.
Tell us a little bit about how the money can be used and is it all able to be forgiven the same way the original PPP was or?
Yeah. I mean the original PPP, both of them PPP one and PPP two, are loans that can be forgiven, right? And this is really a grant that, if not used properly, can turn into a loan. So I know it sounds like they're exactly the same, but they're not. Like as long as you spend the money, we now have almost 2 years to spend it. And you can spend it on payroll, rent, building your outside cabin, hut, patio.
Streetery.
Streetery. You can pay off some of your debt. You can basically spend it on anything except, a yacht.
Right.
Don't spend it on a yacht.
And not a new restaurant either.
And not a new restaurant. Right.
So it's only for existing. Is there a time frame for how long you had to have been in existence before?
No, actually, that was one of the really amazing things that came out of this. I'm a partner in an ethno restaurant, Lekka Burger. Mm-hmm. And we'd only been open for 2 months in 2019. We're still open now, but because of those 2 months, we're actually able to apply for the fund. It's just calculated differently than if you were in business for a whole year. And then even if you opened in 2020 or are about to open, you can actually get some of the fund because they realize people have spent money. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, because just because you're not actually open, it takes 10 months on average to build a restaurant. So you've already been paying rent. You didn't, depending and you weren't able to operate.
You have all these costs and what do you do? You're going to go bankrupt because
before
you couldn't
even open.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So interesting. So even if you didn't actually open in 2019 and what if you were like have a lease, but you're not actually opened in 2020 or 2021 yet?
The third calculation, there's actually, four different ways to calculate. And I think if you're about to open, you can still apply. As long as you have your lease signed, you have your tax number, you can show receipts for money already spent. I believe that you can apply.
And what are the four? So you said there's four calculations. So walk us through what the four ways to ask for funds are.
Well, the first one would be if you're just in business and you calculate your 2019.
It's based on your revenue.
Yeah, 2019 revenue minus 2020 revenue. And
what percentage of that are you able to apply for?
All of it minus any loans you've gotten, like any PPP. Not if you got the EIDL loan, the EIDL.
Right.
So you can apply for a loan equal to your revenue from the year before minus
two PPPs.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It actually sort of works out if you didn't open or you had very little revenue, you'll get more money, right? So places, which is fair, it's how it should work. If you're up and running and you're not going to get
you
as
don't
much.
Need it. Right. Theoretically, you should have. And making revenue.
Right. And then the second one is, again, sort of like Lekka Burger. You take the average of the months that you were open. Mm-hmm. And that's what you'll end up getting. And then for as many months as you were for the whole year. So if you had 2 months that you were open, you would times it by that average by 12. And then the third one again, as the third and fourth are the ones, because they don't apply to me at all. But that's where you can show that I wasn't able to open at all.
Right.
And I'm a new business and here are my receipts and you'll get enough money for that.
Do people have to navigate the application alone or are they able to contact the IRC for assistance or is there anyone?
You
SBA
can actually, I mean, you can
assistance?
Certainly contact the IRC, but we'll probably push you to the SBA. They have two really amazing things. They have a hotline where they are answering all your questions, super helpful. And they also did this like amazing fact page where like any question you could possibly have, they've tried to answer. Part of what we were doing in the run up to this was we hosted a lot of roundtables. So almost every member of the IRC participated in these roundtables, often with the SBA. And they would actually take the questions from the chat alongside and realize those were questions that people were going to want to know. And that's sort of what's on their Q&A forms. So it's really neat. They've been great.
That's amazing.
And how long is it taking to get the loans out?
We don't know.
Okay.
TBD. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of verification. You have to go through a whole IRS verification. Then you have to have your application reviewed by the SBA again. And so it's supposed to maybe be a 10-day turnaround.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
Yeah. But it could also take much, much longer, depending on how many questions they have.
And I know there was the priority groups, but at this point, the application process is open to anybody.
Yeah, it was open from the moment that 12 o'clock on Monday, it was open to anybody. But they won't be
processing
considered.
Right. How long did the application take you? Like, what should people be expecting if they haven't yet applied and they're going to go put their application in?
Well, it's funny because having been on a bunch of these roundtables, and then the SBA also did a couple of webinars. So they were sort of like, it was all like they were giving us the answers to the test.
Yeah.
So I feel like all of us who had been watching these, like we practiced doing, they were like, yeah, you should be able to do it in under 20 minutes. And we were like, okay.
Did it work? Did you time yourself?
I did, but I got stuck because they link up to your bank account and there's three ways the bank can contact me, I guess, but one of them had the wrong phone number and then they don't go to the next two. And I couldn't understand. I was like crying on the phone with Bank of America. I was like, why? Well,
sure that all of your banking information is correct with your correct phone number.
Exactly. But if you have all the documents and you look at it, it really does only take about 20 minutes.
About 20 minutes. And it's not something you need like a CPA to help you with. It's information that
you should have
your bookkeeper and pretty straight.
No, and actually it has to be you who fills it in because you have to sign it. And so because it's all online, like you can't share it, right? Okay. One person gets to sign it.
Right. Yeah. And how much like data did you have to go back for? Just 2019 or?
I think just 2019 tax, my 2019, I mean, for me, it was 2019 taxes. I had 3 months of current bank account because I wanted to make sure you're still open.
Right.
And then my POS from 2019 reports in 2020. And I honestly think that was it. Like you don't need that much. They're going to go and review it. And they look at your bank account to make sure like everything is on the up and up.
Yeah.
You did 2020. Were they reviewing to see like if you did business? I mean, suppose you turned in a successful pivot and were doing really well. Will they still be getting as much money or is that money come out of the loan?
That money comes out. So let's say I used to do 2 million and then I did 500 this year and I have like 500 in PPP. These aren't my numbers, but PPP loans, then I would actually be eligible for $1 million. Mm-hmm. Right. But so if I did $2 million usually, and then I did, I don't know, 1.5 million and my PPP loans are 500,000. I'm not eligible. There's no difference in that, but that's good for you. That means like
unfairly benefiting someone who's done great during a pivot or something.
Yeah,
like
somewhat what happened during with PPP is it was based on payroll, not on revenue. So I think that's a really big distinction.
Yeah, fast casual places were cashing in both on PPP and on.
Yeah, that's
business.
Right. You could be doing as well as you could and your entire staff, and you're just
and you're just getting a PPP loan, which isn't quite fair. It was all self-certified. So
well, and then also with the PPP, it was particularly hard for. Because we're all in very different situations for places like New York and LA and Chicago, where we weren't open for most of it.
Right.
Right. So for the first PPP, until they extended it the 24 weeks, I was like, well, what am I going to do? Just hire people.
Right.
And then, or have like some of them come to work when I'm open and then like some of them get to stay home. Like it didn't make any sense because we couldn't even do indoors. So what am I going to do with 35
employees?
Right.
The window to spend it was very short.
And originally
it was
only 6 months.
The 2-year window of this one it makes a big difference.
Huge difference. Yeah. And you can spend it on much, much more.
Right.
What does it mean for your business? Like, you know, how is it fundamentally changing things for you? Is it fundamentally changing how you're reopening? Like, is there,
Yeah. Well, for me, I think both PPPs and the RRF, I am a very tourist heavy restaurant. I'm a real destination restaurant. We learned that very quickly. I'd always thought that, but we learned that very quickly when we reopened and we were like, oh yeah, where is everybody? There's nobody here. And I mean, we did our best to become a neighborhood restaurant, but it's really hard to change people's opinions of what you are. And so for me, it'll allow me to actually just stay open, mm-hmm. pay my rent, pay my employees, even if I don't do that well, because I doubt I'm going to fill up to the numbers I was until tourism really returns. And that is going to be...
I think that's the case for a lot of New York restaurants too.
A lot.
Does it change your mind about the idea as a business owner? Would you next shop, would you try to be more of a balance between... neighborhood and
there is so much that I would now do. Haven't been through it. I'm because after Hurricane Sandy, I was like, all right, I'll never have a restaurant that you have to walk downstairs to.
No more basement.
I learned that one. This one, I'm like, okay, never open a restaurant on a street where you're the only restaurant. Never open one on a commercial street. Mm-hmm. Never open one where you can't open your windows. Well, because I found that the places that are really busy actually sort of they tend to be pockets.
Overflower.
Yeah, I think they go down and they're like, oh, people are like, oh, it's fun. It's amazing. Like, look, there's all these people on the street and they're talking and like, you know, you feel this real communal spirit with the restaurant right next door to you.
Right.
Dirt Candy is this like eyesore in the middle of Allen Street.
It's not an eyesore.
But it is like our patio just sticks out. We're the only one almost all the way down Allen Street until you get past Rivington.
Right. So for our listeners, the block that Amanda's referring to is, you know, there's like a hotel and a bank and and then like a bus stop just to the other side. So it is, it's a big block, but it is sort of on the edge of where there are smaller storefronts.
But then, a block and a half away is like the
Party
the
Central.
Height
it's
of
Party
Orchard
Central.
Street. That's exactly what you're saying. Is the restaurants feed off of each
other.
But
even like
I wouldn't have thought about that
a side street, like it's, you know, I just... all those side streets as I walk home about 40 blocks and any place where there's like more than one restaurant next to each other, there it just always seems to be busy in restaurants and that I'm always like, what? But you're so much busier than me now, but I've never seen anybody in you before. I thought you were just a front.
Like
I've been really surprised by some of the places and good for them that have done quite well throughout the pandemic.
Yeah, it is a little counterintuitive, but it's, you know, it's interesting. So what have, so up until this point, you did reopen some, but you were, had pivoted concept a little bit. So what were you all doing?
So we did sandwiches and salads and soups and throughout the summer. And we had a slushy machine like everybody else.
is it still
there's
there?
A little aisle for the slushy machine.
Will it stay or is it going to get thrown out the back?
It'll stay for a while. There's nowhere to, but because our restaurant's so open, it's like an eyesore. It is. I mean, there's, you just can see it. There's nowhere good to put it.
The slushy machine.
The slushy machine. And then, so, oh, and we also, I work a little bit with Oatly. And so they were kind enough to let me be the test with the tester for their soft serve. So we have a soft serve machine with the Oatly soft serve and it's delicious, but that's, so we tried all these things to get people in the door. And then at night we have a set menu, sort of a little nod to what we used to be.
It's dirt candy light.
Yeah. Dirt candy light, I guess 4 or 5 courses, much cheaper than we used to be. Yeah, I mean, people are coming and we change the menu every 2 weeks at night. So that's been nice. We've gotten all these new regulars and people who are really supporting us through that. But if I ever open another restaurant, I think I would like it to be a little bit more neighborhood friendly. We've tried to reach out to the neighbors and that was a mistake that we made, I think, starting off from the beginning. At the same time, the menu that we have and the restaurant that we have, it does skew a little bit higher end. And so it's hard to find that balance.
Not every restaurant needs to necessarily be a neighborhood restaurant, but in
and
time
the
of
pandemic,
pandemic
that's
you
right.
kind of do.
That's what I have to prepare for a pandemic the next time I open a restaurant.
Well, hopefully it's a once in 100-year thing. Let's pray there's not another one anytime soon in our lifetimes. But I think it is interesting because I think in the major cities that do rely on tourism, like New York, like Chicago, I think it will be a little bit of a long haul until we have tourism back for so many of us. So I think it's like the timing for the RRF.
It's what's going to keep us, you know, I'm not going to come out of this a millionaire, but I'll at least be able to keep my doors open and be waiting for the tourists when they come back.
Right.
So speaking about keeping your doors open, let's talk a little bit about reopening because it's coming up
it
May 20th. So mark your calendars and tell us about what the restaurant will look like. Dirt Candy 2.0 or actually 3.0. Is it 3.0?
I think it's 3.0.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us.
So we have not done indoor dining yet. We haven't done it the entire pandemic. We're probably one of the few that didn't. We kept trying to push it off as far into the future.
Is that because you wanted people to be vaccinated or?
Yeah, we wanted people to be vaccinated. We wanted us to be vaccinated. We wanted more of the population to be vaccinated. Mm-hmm. But also we've had quite a year with guests and most of them have been amazing, but we've also had to be the COVID police. You know, put your mask on. And I can't do that outside and inside. I can't ask my servers to do that. Mm-hmm. It was pretty brutal sometimes. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to wait to make sure there really was a little bit more herd immunity, even mm-hmm. if we haven't quite hit it yet. Mm-hmm. And also part of it was I wanted to make sure we weren't going back. I didn't want to open and then have to close the doors again, like we did in the fall.
It's right, because then it's just like you took people off unemployment right. And it's like so heartbreaking to have to shut it down again, waste ingredients.
Exactly. Like that was already too hard the first time. So, I mean, we picked a random date, May 20th, which is funny because we're still really opening at 50% capacity inside, but you can be 100% now mm-hmm. at that point in New York.
But you'll do 50% of
Because... I mean, if we space out the tables and we're not getting barriers and we do 50% in our dining room, which is about 24% or so, or I guess 22 tables mm-hmm. or 22 people, I have 22 outside. So I'm full capacity. I don't have the ability to really, if the whole dining room is sitting down at one time, to serve more people than that. Like it fundamentally changes my business.
Right.
So we get to, seem really like we're doing the right thing by keeping our table spaced and not having that many people in. But the reality is, it's just because the 50% and the outdoors.
It's not a huge kitchen. I know that when we walk by, sometimes we'll see the team prepping in the dining room before dinner or whatnot. So
yeah, and what you see, there's no secret kitchen.
Yeah. Right.
All of a sudden I was gonna be like, well, so instead of having 4 people at night, I'm gonna have like 8 people at night. Serve. Like it just didn't.
Right.
I was like, that's too big of a headache. Mm-hmm. I'm really fascinated by how this is actually going to work out in the city, because I know we've had a lot of restaurants closed, but to me, it seems like we have more seats than we have mm-hmm. ever had because of the outdoors.
Sure.
You know, people can basically just put barriers up in their restaurant and be at 100% capacity. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have any spacing. And then they have a full outside patio.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot more seats. So nobody's going to have to go out and eat at 5:30 or 10:30 anymore. Right. Like the city will have enough seats.
I still like eating at 5:30. But it is true. It's, so your capacity basically essentially doubles with your outside.
It could. I mean, I could.
If you were cool,
certainly do 44 people inside and another 22 outside. I mean, I could put more people outside too. Our tables outside are spaced.
Very spaced.
Yeah.
So eventually, I mean, there will be opportunities for people to do even better. Hopefully, I mean, that's the other like silver lining.
Yeah. If they can find employees.
Right. So that brings us to the next point. So I don't know if you don't follow Dirt Candy on Instagram, you should. And this week, Amanda posted for hiring all positions and starting wage is $25 an hour, 25 to 27.
25 actually. To 27. We have a couple of people who full disclosure that we're paying a little bit less than that, but they have no experience. Mm-hmm. And so our goal is to get them up to 25 mm-hmm. as fast as possible. But I think the pay rate is 22 or 23 for them.
And historically, we all know people basically pay minimum wage for kitchen employees, right? So in New York City, it's been $15 an hour. And that was pretty standard, even like some like line cooks and sous chefs are making 17.
In the last couple of years.
Yeah. So tell us about, this sent ripples. People have been talking about it. I've seen it reposted a million times, rightfully so. So tell us about the decision behind this and what
the
it
other
means.
Thing before you do that is that people aren't always even paying for the hours worked. They're often paying a standard 8-hour shift and then working 10 to 12 hours.
Yes.
Which I had done many times.
We never really did that in the restaurant. It's funny because of all the things I've ever posted or ever said out loud, this is the one that's like
it's gone bananas.
Gone. Yeah, yeah. It's crazy.
Gone viral.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a weird metric, but like, I think I have the highest, like, likes I've ever had on Instagram, maybe like 2,500. And I think I'm at like 5,500 now, like just really like it's bizarre to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, when the pandemic happened right at the beginning, before we knew anything about the stimulus checks that were coming out and enhanced unemployment, and I had paid my staff pretty decently. We don't have tipping. So we were able to sort of, you know, at least make sure that our cooks were well paid, not great, but well paid, and that our servers had this sort of guaranteed income every week. But I looked at them and I was like, oh, we're all fucked, basically. I'm like, I know you, there's no way you guys are going to be able to survive. I mean, obviously you can survive, but like, this is going to be really tough after 2 weeks for you. And I mean, it was going to be really tough for me as a restaurant owner, because I know how much I had in my bank account. It's like, ah, it's going to be tough. I was like, okay, I'm here. We're going to go through this right now. And actually we were pretty fortunate in Dirt Candy, because everybody was paid what they were paid. They were on the high end of unemployment. So it ended up working out okay for them, I guess. But that fear, that moment of panic that I had the day when I had to close the restaurant, and I guess the hours leading up to it, I was like, I never want to go through this again. And I don't want anybody to work for me to ever feel what they're probably feeling right now. And so I basically made a promise to myself, and I wrote a New York Times piece based on it too, which is that I'm not opening the same restaurant I closed. I'm not going to do this. I was like, you know, I have to give me more of a safety net, and I have to give my staff more of a safety net. And then, you know, the months dragged on.
And dragged.
Took a lot of time to think about it.
Yeah, and a lot of time. And then a lot of things happened sort of in the media and online. And, you know, I think there was a whole sort of reckoning for sort of workplaces and what that meant. And it sort of solidified everything I had been thinking about for months. And then I learned a lot in it. I don't agree with everything, but there was certainly I took a lot away from the discussions. And yeah, I mean, when we decided we were going to reopen, I sat my staff down and I was like, we're not opening the same restaurant we closed. And this is what we're going to do. We are going to pay our employees a living wage. And to me in New York, that is about $25 an hour. It's still not enough. That actually kills me, but I won't have enough money to pay more. But hopefully as time goes on, this experiment works out, we'll be able to pay more. But
tell us a little bit about that. Like, you know, you're nearly doubling your labor versus other restaurants. So obviously you don't have to give us all of your numbers, but how do you balance that on your balance sheet to make it? Prices double? Do the
well? That's what we're going to do.
Profit margin shrink. Where is it?
Yeah. Well, you can't really shrink my profit margins much.
Most
more.
Restaurants you can. It's 5-10% max. 5-10%. You know?
So it's pretty low. It was pretty low.
That's why we need to know. How are you doing this?
How am I doing this? Well, payroll is already basically 50% because of no tipping, right? Because in a quick explanation is payroll is usually about 30%. I take the extra 20% that people are getting tipped, add that in, and then it gets paid out and that gets to 50%. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it seems really high, but everybody's is really across the city. Right. 50%, that's just not how it's calculated,
right?
Because it's not based on tips. So everybody who's like, my payroll's really like low, it's actually sort of this false logic.
Right.
And I had always undercharged somewhat, even though my prices are expensive.
It was a value.
It was
an extreme value. And I'm glad you raised prices. I will be the first to say that.
I mean, $85 for 5 courses is still a value.
I say it's still
I know. Okay. And we will probably raise it at some point. This is we're slowly tiptoeing into it. But it's hard. We serve vegetables. We don't have like these big luxurious ingredients. It's really hard to convince people that vegetables have value. Really, like when you buy a plate of food at a restaurant, you really think you're just paying for that piece of meat. The vegetables are the side. They might as well be free half the time. Like they are free. And even when people go into a supermarket, you know, they don't buy vegetables because they think they're too expensive there, but they think they should be free in a restaurant. Like it just doesn't compute.
Right.
And also, this is a whole separate conversation, but Dirt Candy sort of isn't one of those we get a lot of recognition, and I'm not an ignored chef, but we don't get a lot of awards and sort of like honors. And it's really hard to raise your prices, I think, unless you have like a Michelin star. And then you're like, oh, well, now I'm in this category, so I can do this. Or I want a James Beard, so I can do this. That's sort of the natural progression. That's how those high-end restaurants end up getting this incredibly high price. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, and also vegetarians sometimes tend to skew, or vegans skew young. And they don't have a lot of money.
Right.
So it is.
Yeah.
Market has grown.
But it's, I mean, it's smart of you as a business owner to realize who your customer is, right, to understand and how to give them the value that they perceive and to push that as much as you can.
So how we're making it work now, hopefully it does work. We're charging a lot more with one menu a night. Right. And so we used to run two menus side by side, and it's not that we had a ton of waste, but I wasted a lot of labor energy and wasted like so much, because we, even though we sort of knew what was going to, it was 50-50 chance that one of them was going to get chosen. It was just a lot of work. And over the summer, when I started looking at the numbers, our food costs, because we were really ordering for one menu at night, they were lower than they've ever been in my entire history of Dirt Candy. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. I mean, duh, but
sometimes you just need to see it.
Yeah. And I was like, actually, that sort of, that's the nut I almost can use to do some of what I want to do, because it is in the end, a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so we're raising the prices. Our food costs are going to go way down. Mm-hmm. We are hiring our staff at a much higher rate than they were beforehand. But even then, it's not, I was already paying my servers $25 an hour. So I had some of that already built into my payroll, and it's really the line cooks and who are getting a bigger raise, but it's not $10. It's like somewhere between 7 for some of them and 5 for others. So
big raise.
It's still a big raise.
It is still a big raise. Yeah.
It's still significant.
Do you have the same quantity of staff?
No, we'll have much less. It's a much more streamlined.
Yeah. So because you're able to do it with less people, less food waste at a better food cost. And that's
where I would imagine you're going to have more longevity with your team, which means they're going to be better trained.
Yeah. And and the more we have
more
that,
more efficient, as they say.
That's right. Then they also can participate in making sure this business runs better than it did beforehand. And we didn't have a huge staff turnover constantly, but it was enough where, you know, it starts to feel a little unsettled and not as cohesive as I wanted it to be. So that was one of the other reasons I also wanted to do this. And we're going to offer health insurance.
Yay!
That's the hard one, because it's
so expensive. We offer health insurance for our small team, and it's expensive.
Yeah, that's the one.
But I feel really, I cried the day we announced you're giving health insurance to people as a small business. And this team was like, why are you crying? I'm like, because it's America. I'm giving somebody health insurance.
Yeah.
It feels good. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's a tough thing, especially in this industry when people are young, but they haven't been making a lot, and something happens. And
I know. You never see them again, because they're like, I'm not going back.
Yeah.
I mean, we won't be able to pay 100% for their health insurance, but of course we'll figure it out. Yeah, subsidize some of it. I want my workers to feel safe. I ask them to work so incredibly hard, and I want them to believe in us as much as we believe in them.
So everybody's saying that it's a really tight labor market for hospitality right now. After you announced this, did you see an influx of candidates?
Suck it to all those people. We have more applicants than we know what to do with.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you think that's because of the pay that you guys posted?
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think, well, it's funny because a lot of the people who we've been interviewing, yes, they've come for the pay, but we have a whole
and your culture and what you guys are doing.
They're like, actually, I really want to work with you
operator.
All. Yeah, exactly. They're like, actually, I like the idea of this place. I like what you're doing. This is where I want to be. And I think that's one of the discussions that was sort of going on constantly online too, where workers felt just sort of like, workers. They didn't feel devalued, very participatory in the business because they weren't invited in. And we thought we had, but obviously we haven't done enough. And so they've really like sort of when they read the ad and I guess the post, they're like, I like the idea of the culture that they want to do at this restaurant. And that's something that I want to be a part of and help build.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see how experiment with this, and Dirt Candy 3.0 works out. And I think
me too.
I think you'll be fine. I think there are good things to come. And it, you know, when you put something like that out there and you do try to change a culture, it hopefully has ripple effects and changes things for the better for multiple people.
I hope so. You know, it's one of those where everybody, so many people, you know, they post like something about Black Lives Matter or it's something about workers. And they were like, yeah, this is what we have to do. And the real test of it is, where do you spend your money, right? Are you going to spend it at a place like Dirt Candy, whether or not you like the food, but you know, they treat their workers well, or are you going to spend it somewhere else where, you know, it's just a regular restaurant and they're not doing a, you know, right by their employees. And that's what, to me, this whole past year has come down to, like, where are you going to spend
your dollars?
Yeah.
Vote with your dollars. I agree with that. And I think hopefully people, some of the psychology has changed where people are valuing products that restaurants and people are actually putting out in their labor and all the time for it.
Owning and operating a restaurant is difficult as it is, right? So there's all the things that you have to deal with labor and menu and getting the doors open every day, and let alone now in these times with the pandemic. So can you imagine also having all these different third-party systems?
We need systems. That's why there's Pop Menu. It's the restaurant tool that turns more first-time guests into regulars. And guess what, folks? It integrates many of the third-party systems.
It's an all-in-one toolkit, right, for restaurant owners. And basically, they do dynamic menu design, contactless ordering, automated remarketing. They can host your website. And then when they host your website, then you get analytics, email marketing, social endorsements.
We all know how important those social endorsements are. They have reviews right on your menu page, which, look, getting a vote of confidence from other people really pushes everybody over the edge.
Right. And I know that, you know, every time that we look for a new place to dine out, it always starts where? Online, right?
Online. So, always online.
Making sure that your website or that your website's up to date and stylish and looks great and also has all the functionality and ease of use for both you and for your consumer is basically what Pop Menu does for you, right?
That's it. So trust me, if you're a restaurant owner, you need Pop Menu to take your business to the next level. For a limited time only, you get $100 off of your first month. Plus, you lock in one unchanging monthly rate. So go to popmenu.com/HRN.
That's $100 off your first month at popmenu.com/HRN.
Reopening season is upon us, and I'm sure you all are super busy hiring your team and onboarding new people. So what a better time to get yourself acquainted with Diageo Bar Academy.
It's a great place for not only for you as an owner operator, but also for your team to really pick up on a lot of useful skills. A lot of those things that you didn't even know you were missing. So, all kinds of things that you can brush up on your latest cocktail and bar trends, step up social media marketing, you know, really improve your menu and really get your team and your staff motivated. There's a lot to learn from Diageo Bar Academy.
And the best part about Diageo Bar Academy, have I told you? It's free. So you can get all these trainings, all these amazing resources for your team, things to help you learn how to have a more profitable menu for free.
So make sure you stay informed, inspired, and connected to grow your career or your business by joining Diageo Bar Academy today.
So why wait? Visit DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com. Become a member and sign up for all the newsletters, all the content. It's completely free. You will be amazed at what they have. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
We like to do a little lightning round to cap it off. So these are meant to be quick 1 to 2 word answers, but you can elaborate where you feel. So you want to start us off?
Sure. What was your, well, you're not reopened entirely yet, but what was your biggest challenge in reopening? Aside from the water shortage today.
the no water in the restaurant. I think it was actually dealing with guests. Again, so many of them have been great, but one or two bad apples can really ruin a night for everybody.
It's re-education for you and the guests.
That's actually, and this is consistent for like the whole past year that we've been interviewing people during the pandemic. It's been like the guests, and same thing. A lot of people have said they didn't want to reopen because they don't want to police people's bad behavior. And
well, and one of the problems is we were really strict.
Yeah.
But there's restaurants around the corner maybe isn't as strict as we were, right? And so I don't even fault the guests at all times. They're like, we'd have these discussions. I'm like, it's ping pong for them. They don't know the rules at each place.
Right.
And everybody has very different ideas of what it should be.
Very.
Which is fine. It's your own idea, I suppose. But
it's tough on the business. You're in somebody else's space. That's all I have to say. What are you most looking forward to with the reopening and everything happening?
I am really looking forward to having a dining room where it's so loud and everything's clanking and there's so many voices and the music is going and you feel this indoor energy, which you cannot feel outside. It's just very, very different. And I'm just so excited for that.
The buzz.
Like, and I want to turn to my manager and be like, oh, why is it so loud in here?
Is that May? No. When will that happen?
Hopefully May 20th.
You think it'll be vibe will be back then?
No, I think it's going to be a while because again, our dining room is only going to have at the most at one time, 22 people in it.
Right.
Plus
you're not going to sit at the bar first, which means you're not going to be as drunk and rowdy.
That's right.
There's a lot. I mean, it's very interesting because I miss that too.
That's the restaurant
culture buzz that the diner gets, a kick out of. And obviously the chefs and the kitchen and the servers and all that. But yeah, that'll be an interesting one to see when that comes back. Any business resources that you would recommend to our listeners, whether it be a book or a person or a SBA type thing? Or
wow. Well, I would definitely say sign up at saverestaurants.com and start getting the Independent Restaurant Coalition newsletter. We formed because of the pandemic. We are going to stay around for a long time.
Good.
And continue to be a voice for independent restaurants because there was never really anybody who was our voice beforehand. We want restaurateurs and people in the industry to support us and become members. And then I also work with the Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, RWCF. RWCF. I'm actually on the board, so please don't get mad at me if you don't want to do this. And I think they're great. And I think what they're doing is exactly what the industry needs, which is focusing a lot more on the employees and how to support them.
Yeah. And the other refrain that you hear over and over if you listen to our show is that if you're in the restaurant business, you're in the employee business. You're not in the restaurant business.
That's right.
And I think that is just so true and evident in what you guys are doing at Dirt Candy. All right. What is your favorite vegetable to cook?
Well, my favorite vegetable, I guess I would consider it to cook, is onions.
Onions.
Yeah, because I really feel like it's often overlooked as a vegetable, but it does so much, layers to this thing. You can make it sweet, you can eat it raw, you cook it, the possibilities with onions are really, really endless. And I feel bad for it because everybody's always like, I don't know, carrot or broccoli and that poor little onion. Nobody recognizes
it. Preferred variation?
I'm a red onion fan.
Red onion.
I like a red onion. I like a raw red onion and salad. I just do. Cool.
Should we do announcements?
Yeah. Well, we always like to shout out opening soon announcements or reopening soon announcements. So you hear it here.
Everyone will be reopening.
Yeah. From our customers. Thank you, customers. We love you too. Everybody's reopening on May 19th, which is
all
awesome.
All of your aprons will be ready.
May 19th. We're trying. But there are a lot of reopenings. So you guys are reopening on May 20th.
Yeah.
I know Balabusta is reopening on May 11th here in the city.
May 19th as well, I thought. No?
Oh, I thought they were the 11th.
I don't know.
Sorry, not. We have Contra's reopening.
Yeah.
In the coming weeks. I think they're also in a week or two. They retained their Michelin star, which they were thankful for. Lots of anybody you want to shout out?
And all the restaurants. Just keep supporting us.
Yes, please. Awesome.
Tell us how we can find you, social, whatnot. What's your handles?
Dirt Candy or Dirt Candy NYC, depends. I think Instagram's Dirt Candy NYC and Twitter is Dirt Candy Dirt Candy NYC was already, or just Dirt Candy was already taken on Instagram. I know, so annoying.
We are at We Are Opening Soon and at Till It NYC. And thanks for being here.
Thank you so much
for being here. Thanks for having me.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You could also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.